I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
I got out of that soul stone, so I'm pretty okay.
Yeah, I mean, what is the situation? Is it like a Pokeball? Are you asleep the entire time? Can you see what's going on?
No. It's more like... You know the Phantom Zone
from the Superman movie?
The movies.
The Phantom Zone, where they're trapped in like the little trapezoid moving through space and time?
Yeah, you're like that, except you're not being flipping through space, just some jerk is carrying you around, and you can see out of it, but you know, you're still inside it. It's like you're inside a small... It's like, you know what? I'll use the example of a genie's bottle.
It's like being
in a genie's bottle, and you can see out of the bottle, because it's a bottle, but you're like really small inside it. You don't really actually have a body or anything, so you're just kind of like, it's unpleasant.
That sounds unpleasant. But, well, I'm glad you're out of that so that we could, you know, have this podcast and talk about some of these wonderful questions our listeners sent us. So today we are going to be answering your questions. If you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, be sure to send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can go ahead and just specify what show it's for. If you want to hit us up on our Discord server, we have one for everybody, which is just the Q and Podcast Questions channel. And then we have one set aside specifically for our Patreon supporters, which is where the vast majority of these questions come from. It's our special way of saying thank you. Again, we ask that you specify what show it's for, but also if you have a special pronunciation of your name, it helps us out. So this one comes from our friend Gavlin, who... Gavlin's been sending us a lot of questions lately. Thank you, Gavlin.
Thank you, Gavlin.
Northeast of Zabinze in Hawazar, you run across a platform and get the text, The Lost City of Ura. It's been a while since I read the legend and looked at the concept art for Diablo 3's development, but what's the deal with Ura? Wasn't it supposed to have ascended to the high heavens? What do you think the significance is of it being in Hawazar, since Hawazar is outside of Sanctuary? Is that what it escaped to? Is it possible that this is where Akarot went to? Connect the dots for me, please. Matt, do you have opinions on this? What do you think?
No.
That's a lie. We all know that's a lie.
I know. Let me put you this way. The city supposedly ascended. That's in previous lore. That doesn't necessarily mean that the city, the physical city, the actual buildings and so forth went there. It could just be that the people went there. Basically though, the Lost City of Ura is a reference to a Realm of the Pillars, which is an old... This is basically, I don't want to call it folklore exactly, because it's part of, let's just call it Arabic myth and legend. It's a location that's been spoken of as literally a missing city. And the thing is, it's based in reality. Like, an actual city did vanish. Like, the city simply is not there. But it's a reference to that. And Eura itself, I don't know if we're going to find out that it did go to the heavens or not. I have this really weird theory about what's been going on in heaven since Diablo 3. Because during Diablo 3, something unthinkable happened in heaven, namely that a primeval walked and attacked the Crystal Arch. And Joe, I believe, a couple of shows back now, I'm thinking back when we were doing our big Diablo 4 retrospective with Liz, I think Joe made the point that the Crystal Arch might not have come through that unscathed.
Mm-hmm.
I think Joe and Liz were both talking about it. And I've been thinking about that ever since. And it's like, what exactly happens? I mean, obviously, after Diablo was defeated, the angels seem to be like rally. They seem to come back. Imperius seemed to be okay. But when the arch was actually being attacked, all the angels dropped.
Yeah, they couldn't function. We actually had to go save a bunch of
down.
Them.
Yeah, like they just collapsed. We saw at one point Imperius and the others that were following him, his direct servants, just all went down. Like while you were looking at them. And that has me thinking, maybe we've been thinking about what an angel is and what their existence is entirely wrong.
We can definitely talk about that in a little bit, but I want to stick with the Eura first.
Well, that's what I'm going for here. When it says it ascended to the high heavens, that doesn't, like I said, I don't think that means that the physical city.
Well, we know that the physical city didn't, though, right? Because in the Kingdom of Shadow with Richard Knack, like the city is still there. The treasures of the city are still supposedly there, mm-hmm. right? Isn't that the whole concept of it? And isn't there a trio that go after it?
I haven't read that story in a long time. So if you're asking me to like give you plot details on it, that much I can't do.
Yeah, I think because there was a necromancer. I think it was Zale. I think was the one that. Assisted.
I think he is technically the canonical necromancer from Diablo 2.
Yes.
And that's what's interesting here because it's another example of a reference to one of the canonical Diablo 2 characters. Because keep in mind, in Hawazar, the paladin from Diablo 2's resting place is found.
Yes.
We know where he died and we know what he was doing when he died. I don't think. Here's my thing about Hawazar. I know that the witches say that thing about how Hawazar be, you know, leaking into Sanctuary and then people saying it's on Sanctuary. And they were like, is it? I'm not saying that that's not accurate. I'm saying what it actually means isn't as simple as Hawazar is from someplace else. Yeah. I think it's more like Hawazar itself.
Well, I think I know where you're going with this. I've been thinking about this a lot too. Let's think of it in terms of just what we know from Diablo 4, right? Mm-hmm. So in Diablo, we've already seen that you can get to hell by hell gates. Those hell gates are places on Sanctuary that lead to the realm of hell itself. It stands to reason that if there are gates to hell on Sanctuary or methods of which to open some form of portal between them, that the idea of opening a portal between other realms or finding a way to connect those other realms back to Sanctuary, it's not unheard of, right? So, like, getting to heaven, how does one get to heaven? How does one ascend to heaven? They never really explained that, right? And when we go there,
in Diablo, we go through a portal.
We go through a portal. In Diablo 2, you fought. You were in the high heavens, and the high heavens was butted up against the eternal battlefield. And on the other end of the eternal battlefield was hell itself. Like, there were. Like Pandemonium Fortress didn't exactly exist in Euclidean space, right? Like all of these places, all of these things sort of exist extra dimensionally and sort of overlap in weird and strange ways. We've seen this. We've seen sorcerers that were able to open up portals or get a path to heaven. We don't know what that means, but they were able to get there.
While you're talking about that, though, in Diablo 3, when you are in Pandemonium, things can come up out of the ground and attack you.
Yes.
And if you kill them, they turn into portals.
Yes.
And inside those portals is another world that you can go to and you can run around in it and then you can come out. It's like, but that's not the way Hawazar seems to exist. And that's one of the things I keep thinking about. There's no portal when you go to Hawazar. You just ride down the road.
You're just there.
In Hawazar. And we've been underground in both Hauazar and other parts of Sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the stuff is the same. Like all the underground stuff, the weird tendrils, the pulsating, you know, for lack of a better word, Sanctuary's guts seem to exist in Hauazar. So we've talked before about this. We were talking about this, I'm going to say, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
We talked about the concept of when the Worldstone was used before and the echoes of the Worldstone's original creation. I think someone even asked us about it, and that's when we first started talking about it. And I've been thinking about that, and I've been thinking about what angels are. And I've been thinking about what demons are. Because here's the thing. The seven evils were the heads of Tathamet, right? That ripped themselves out of its corpse and started doing evil.
Mm-hmm.
But does that mean they're not actually, like, in a way, are they still just that thing's heads? Like, if you found Tathamet's body...
We know the Tathamet's body. Tathamet's body is the Burning Hells.
Yeah, but if you found the specific thing, like, the not the concept of it, but the thing of it, much like going to the heavens, the Crystal Arch is right there. It is the spine of the Diamond Warrior, mm-hmm. and it's visible. You can go to it, you can attack it. I think that when you talk about, like, Ura here, and the city's actual location in Hauazar, I think that Hauazar is a remnant of another
attempt.
And I think that it's like a pearl that Sanctuary has insisted.
Maybe,
for lack of a better term. I mean, that's not the right word, but I don't know what word to call. When you get an outside fragment in your body, one of the things the body might do to incorporate it is to envelop it and then absorb it. That is something that actually has happened to me. I had a really bad scar when I was younger. There was lots of foreign material in the injury because it was a burn. And so my body created a really big, like, for lack of a better word, a big bolus of scar tissue. I had it on my leg for years. But as I grew, my body incorporated it.
Mm-hmm.
All that stuff is either just part of me now or is gone. But the mark on my leg is still there. Now, I think in a psychic sense, that's what Hauazar is.
There's definitely a possibility for that, yeah.
Yeah. And I also don't think that means Hauazar is now just part of Sanctuary. I think that Hauazar is Hauazar. But in a way, I think that that's true of other places on Sanctuary.
Yeah,
so go ahead, because I know you've got something, Jeff.
No, I was going to say, so one of the other things that we talk about, too, is, like, we haven't seen all of Sanctuary. We've talked about, like, the Skovos Isles. We talked about these places that we know existed. But there's a lot of places that we've been to that didn't exist before or existed in different capacities. One of the things I was actually really curious about is we know that there are all these realms, going back to something we talked about before, all these realms are sort of created with the Worldstone beforehand. And what is the Worldstone? It's the Eye of Anu. It's sort of this piece of an all-being god that was able to create entire worlds. We don't know what happens to that. We've never known what happens when those worlds cease to exist, or if they do actually cease to exist. Because as long as fragments of the world soul exist, or the world stone exist in any capacity, can they actually truly ever go away? And in the same way that we're talking about the angels and the devils and all the primevals of hell, they don't cease to exist. When they die, they just reform. Angels lose their memory of what they are or what they were beforehand, but the concept is reborn, and the cycle continues anew. When the demons are reborn, they remember everything, you know, but they're still reborn. They're not completely gone. That's part of the whole shtick and story of Diablo and Diablo 4. What if that's the same with the worlds? They're still created from the essence, the same essence everything like owes its lineage to. Do they go away, or do they just magnetically pull into whatever else is created? Like, how is our, we talked about it
or,
being,
or
go ahead,
going on that same idea, maybe it's not so much that they're pulled into what's created, but we've talked before about the concept that the entirety of Sanctuary and the entirety of the existence around Sanctuary is Anu essentially creating a more complex existence for itself.
Yeah, a more perfect being. By
yeah, it just, you know, in order to know oneself, one has to experience, and one has to so forth and so on. What if they are recreated because they are the building blocks
mm-hmm.
Like, this is going to be a really weird reference, guys.
But iterations, right?
Yeah, well, not just that. I was watching Strange New Worlds the other day. They had the crossover with Lower Decks, which everyone thought was going to be ridiculous, but it was funny, but it was also actually kind of serious in places. But one of the things they talked about was the tradition that when a starship is made, if there's a previous starship of that name, they use a piece of that starship in the new starship.
That's an old naval thing.
Yeah. But I only remember it because I just saw it on the show.
Yeah.
But what if that's what happens with the World Stone? When the World Stone when it was first used to create a world, it had nothing to go on. So it just created a world. And then, of course, that world collapsed. Then it was used again. It's been used multiple times. And those worlds always collapsed. Did they collapse because they were just insufficient to keep going? Did they collapse because they were made by only one?
We also don't know what collapse means.
Yeah, we don't even know what that means. So that could also come into this. But what if every time the World Stone's been previously used, it's created a world, that world has existed for however long it existed, and then it, you know, air quotes, collapsed, because we don't know what that means, and then the World Stone's used again, it's going to draw upon previous experience.
It's going to use it almost like a starting point.
Yeah, so what if there is fractally within every world created by the World Stone all the previous worlds created by the World Stone.
And that's kind of what I want. That's kind of what I was getting at a little bit too. You just kind of got there faster.
I wanted to mention it because that means that there could be within Hawazar a piece of an earlier, you know, cosmos, which could be Ura.
We've seen things that would lend that credence to that, right? We've seen things that, you know, again, non-Euclidean spaces, things that are bigger on the inside. Why are they bigger on the inside? Where is this space?
Why are there realms of fractured fate in the heavens?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, why is there a place in the heavens that is like a palimpsest of every place you've ever been?
A palimpsest, you mean?
Yeah, palimpsest, sorry.
That's okay.
I just don't know how to pronounce the word. I just always read it. But the palimpsest of all previous places you've been, why is that there? And what does that have to do with fate? And why is it that the heavens can't determine, you know, the fates of humans?
And just so everybody knows, like a palimpsest is something reused or altered that bears visible traces of its earlier forms. So things that are repurposed or transformed from one thing into another, but still retain identifying marks of the original is a palimpsest. It's an odd word. That is very good in this instance, but I'm not sure many people have heard it.
Yeah, it's often used in art because there are many manuscripts and medieval works of art that were just drawn upon previous work of art.
You'll hear that in archaeology, architecture as well. Like architecture refers to buildings that are reborn out of like ruins or recreations of buildings or remodeling the buildings as palimpsests. But you can
still find like this room is like actually as old as like the previous construction.
Yeah.
I have a tattoo that actually I had done over a previous tattoo,
which is technically a palimpsest. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I deliberately kept the marks of it so you can see them when you look at the tattoo. That's the same kind of idea. And I think that applies to sanctuary. Like, I think that because we're used to thinking of things in terms of concrete, physical, three-dimensional objects, but we keep forgetting that sanctuary is a world that was willed into existence.
Yes.
And we often think, you know, Inarius and Lilith didn't design it. They wanted it to exist, but they didn't tell it what to be. They couldn't conceive of an entire world, so they're like, make us a world to go hide in, and the World Stone did the rest.
Yeah, you know? And we see shades of what we're talking about too here with like some of the early questing in Diablo 4 as well. And I want to bring up the when we go to the the tomb of the first, the tomb of the firstborn.
The necropolis.
The necropolis that we go to originally when we have to travel across the Black Lake. It is a place that exists. We physically go there, but the way that we get there is through ritual in magic and by having a sort of a divine spark in our blood, thanks to having consumed the blood petals of Lilith here. And the interesting thing about that is we can still get there. That place has existed, but what was that place? Why does it exist?
Yeah, and why is it very similar to the place Rathma was at when he discovered the prophecy?
Mm-hmm.
And we go to that place too, and we have to go there by getting in a coffin. And do we actually drown to get there? Like, are we dead when we go there? Like, that's never clearly stated.
No, it's never, like, there's a lot of, like, interesting bits that sort of, like, feed into this. Is the sanctuary contains multitudes is really the best way that I can phrase it, I think.
And one of the things that, like, Joe just made me think of is there's places like Arunach.
Yeah.
The desert and on the other side of the world, really. It's just across the strait, but it's on the other continent. Luke Gullane is in Arunach, and that's where Baal was trapped for a very long time. But Arunach was also full of all these undead, and those undead were created by Mephisto. And that had me thinking, the cities and places that we now know of in Arunach, like Luke Gullane, they are built on top of an entire previous place, because Arunach didn't always look like that. And, you know, when you go to Chaldeum, we don't see it when we go there in Diablo 4, because I don't think we don't have time to head out there. But when we went to Chaldeum originally in Diablo 3, we end up going through the aqueducts. We travel through them and come to some like oasis place. And then after that, we go out to the scar of the Vizdrai Mage Wars, which, remember, those took place a very long time ago. Those Mage Wars were, in fact, how the Burning Hells found Sanctuary, because the mages were summoning demons to use in their wars. And that place is completely unlike any place you've ever been, because reality itself melted from all the stuff they were doing magically. And it's very reminiscent of what we find in Ura, just in a different direction.
Yeah, so I want to go back to Ura a little bit, because there is stuff in the it's very interesting, and there's stuff in the book that I think is absolutely fascinating. So the people of Sanctuary believe that Ura ascended, but part of the problem is that we know that it didn't. It didn't quote unquote ascend. It almost like plane shifted. It's between the mortal and immortal planes, quote unquote, neither living nor dead. Diablo had disguised himself as an archangel, Mirakotis, and basically got Juris Khan and Atana with visions of himself to sort of like try to go through this whole ceremony to open a portal. And he was framing it to them that it was going to be a portal to heaven. Here's the thing. It wasn't. It was supposed to be a portal to hell, so that the prime evils could use the open portal as a means to basically invade Sanctuary. We've seen this before. They've done this before. But what wound up happening is...
In fact, the Triune are another example of this.
Yes. Absolutely. But Gregus Mazzi was never... He was made out to be a traitor, but he wasn't a traitor. He found out that Juris Khan was in league with the Dark Lord of Terror, and the reconfiguration of the spell led the city... towards heaven, but not towards hell. He basically is the one that, instead of opening the gate, shunted it out of reality by modifying the ritual and spell that he was presented. So as far as we know, and it killed, according to the book, it killed everybody. Like, everybody was just dead. So it's there, but not there. It's in the space in between spaces. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like maybe something we went to and saw the Tomb of the First Ones, maybe, or the Firstborn? Does that seem like a trend that we've gone through many times in Diablo 4, where there's this thing that's just shunted just slightly out of phase? So, yeah, it's Ura is an interesting place. And from a non-lore standpoint, it was originally supposed to be in Diablo 3. It was actually part of the Diablo 3 reveal trailer. And then that content was cut with everything that happened with the tumultuous ups and downs of Diablo 3. But that doesn't say we might not get there in Diablo 4, because there are certainly more than one reference to it.
Yeah, and keep in mind that the area we find it is in Hawazar, but that doesn't mean it's considered Hawazar.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was originally said to be east of Khajistan. But that's all it was said, is east of Khajistan. When you go east of Khajistan, you eventually just run into Hawazar. And that it's true that Khajistan treated Hawazar kind of like its own little piggy bank to like, you know, convert people and do whatever they wanted. So, yeah, for that matter, we don't even really know where it is. Like, even though we've been there, That is a problem in Diablo sometimes.
Yeah.
You don't actually know where it is, even though you've been there.
But, I mean, going back to what Matt was talking about earlier, that's one of the things that makes Diablo 4 probably the more, to me, one of the most interesting Diablo prospects we've ever had. Because with everything we've talked about, with the possibility of extra realms, the possibility of, like Matt said, about taking those realms and encapsulating them into it or using them as building blocks.
Or even like DNA.
Or DNA.
If you think of Sanctuary as the child of all these previous Worldstone creations, because those Worldstone creations were created by the Worldstone out of itself and therefore are part of the Worldstone, in a real way, the Worldstone still exists as long as Sanctuary exists. And in fact, when Sanctuary quote-unquote collapses, it might just collapse back down into the Worldstone. When people die in Diablo 3, where do they go? The Worldstone Chamber.
Yep.
Which is, you know, in Pandemonium, where the Worldstone physically was, and maybe still physically is, even though we can't see it or interact with it.
Also, this idea that, like, it shattered and destroyed, there's also the possibility that maybe that's part of it.
I mean, that's what it did. I mean, if you think about what happened to... Oh, bloody hell, I can't remember Anu's name. Anu. Why would I remember Anu's name, but I could remember that I couldn't remember Anu's name? That is really messed up, brain. But, like, when Anu divided itself, it divided itself into two, and then those two, in their quote-unquote destruction of each other, divided again.
Subdivision,
like,
right?
Joe pointed out when we were watching the Book of Lorath videos that at one point he shows a tree, just a tree,
mm-hmm.
And from each of the tree branches off into the various lords of hell and the various archangels, and you see them.
But the interesting thing about that to me was like, yeah, and the tree, I think it's a double meaning too. Just, I'm sorry to interrupt, but like, I just want to jump in here real quick. The trunk is supposed to be Anu, but what does a tree have below that commonality? We often think about a tree branching upward and outward, but it has roots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what are those roots that make Anu? That make everything else. Sorry, please continue.
No, but that's actually an interesting way to look at it, because one of the things to think about with a tree is that a tree is inherently fractal by its nature.
Absolutely.
A tree branches, and each branch branches until it gets to a point where now you've got shoots everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it in terms of how, if you ever seen like electrical wood burning, which is incredibly dangerous, don't do it. People at home, don't do electric wood burning. But if you've ever seen it, you watch as the path burns into the wood and then it branches out. It just goes, and then there's all these like pathways stretching out from it. And that to me feels an awful lot like what we're looking at, because what we're looking at isn't something that is static. And that's something we forget. Trees aren't static.
Nope.
Those roots that the tree puts down, like when you plant a tree, you take a seed, you put the seed in the ground, the tree, you know, the seed immediately starts breaking open when it starts to, for lack of a better word, hatch, although that's not what you would call it. But when it begins to sprout, it, of course, the stuff goes up out of the dirt that we're used to that, but it also then goes down into the ground, as Joe is talking about. That's what we're witnessing. Except we're witnessing it at a speed where we see it happening. Like with a tree, it takes a long time for this stuff to happen. You usually don't get to see it. Mm-hmm. Like life doesn't come with time-lapse photography. But here, and what we're talking about, like the thing Joe was just talking about from the Kingdom in Shadow, I'm trying to think of the right way to put this, but why is it always so easy for Diablo to pretend to be a divine being? Why is it that Diablo can keep doing this? Like the primevals do this a lot. How come? I mean, you'd think it would be just total anathema to them, right? But it isn't.
But they're all drawn from the same essence.
Yeah, not only are they all drawn from the same essence, but think about Imperius for a moment. Imagine if Imperius just showed up in a city and started laying waste to the place.
Well,
yeah, no, but think about what happened with Malthiel.
I was Malthiel just going to say that, yes.
And started laying waste to the place. And did they feel distinctly different from demons?
Well,
like,
I mean,
there was differences, but did they feel like...
But let's look at, you're missing one very specific one that I think is a perfect example of this, Izwal.
Yeah.
He was a fallen angel turned servant of the burning hells. Izwal became a demon. An angel became a demon. So why can't a demon take on the visage of an angel or maybe become an angel?
Right. Well, we haven't seen that happen yet in terms of them actually becoming one, but we have seen it in terms of, like I said, it is real easy for these guys to pretend to be one. And Diablo certainly convinced a whole lot of people.
They're, I'm just trying to point out that the essence that they're made out of seems to be very malleable.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, to answer your question, because since you did ask a specific question about us explaining all this, and we have not, because well, first off, because it's us. And
I was going to say, let's be honest, they expected this. Yeah, Gavlin knew what they were doing.
But in terms of the significance of it being in Hawazar, I think that narratively the significance of it being in Hawazar is Hawazar and Khajistan are almost a gradient between, you know, this is something that is very rooted in this world to this is something that is very much not rooted in this world. And by having Ura be there on the border, it becomes like a symbol. It becomes, in a way, a gateway to Hawazar.
Yeah, and I think it Hawazar itself, like Ura being tangentially linked with Hawazar makes sense because Hawazar is where we start to actually understand that there are gradients to existence. Like the way that Matt puts it, I think is spot on, right? There are levels to existence. It is a layered and varied existence of this world. Nothing is black and white. And also the world itself we've seen shift dramatically over the course of the last 50 years in game, right? We've seen whole landscapes move. We've seen mountains removed. I mean, we saw Mount Ararat explode, right? We've seen continents shift more or less. Like we've seen growth and transformation of the world as time has gone on and things have occurred. And Hawazar sort of like solidifies that as an option. It's like, yes, we're kind of here, but we're not. We're part of Sanctuary, but are we? Everything is in question. Challenge what you know, because you don't know anything, right? So it's often like what we talk about with World of Warcraft. The cosmology chart is one point of view. There's tons of point of view that challenge that, but they're all technically correct. So, but I know that doesn't answer your question. I know we didn't talk about where Akarat went to or if they went to anywhere. I don't know if they could still be around. They could be in another pocket dimension. Maybe Akarat and Bel'Kalthos are on vacation. Who knows? However, we'll probably find out at some point a little bit more about that and what happens with the first Nephilim. We're going to move on to our next question, though, which comes from Tasso. Recently listened to every episode of the last year to current. Thank you, by the way. OG Blizzard fan since the days of Warcraft Orcs and Humans. Wow. One of us. I appreciate that. A lot of the story didn't really sink in over the years, and even into WoW as mainly a Horde PvP player. Shadowlands drop, and it's pretty sure the first time I've ever heard of the character Bolvar Four Dragon, which I think is such a dope name. As it turns out, so many characters have been around so long that never stuck in my goldfish brain. I don't think anyone asked yet, would Joe, Matt, and company discuss the pros and cons of revisiting all the current WoW lore content chronologically versus release date order? With your knowledge and insights, it would be interesting to hear all you ponder the different paths. So the reason I put this in here is I think it's an interesting point that we've talked about occasionally, and it's, is the Warcraft lore gotten so large that there needs to be something in-game or something easier for players to access that sort of recap the stories? I have an opinion on that. Matt, do you have an opinion on that you want to share?
There should be something in game that when you go to it actually tells you lies and confuses you, so you have no idea what's going on. Now, I only half believe that. I think that would be a great dungeon if you go into the dungeon of confused bullshit beep, and it just gives you like complete garbage. But I do think one of the things I've always taken pains to do when we talk about any of this stuff is to say, you know, I am an interested fan.
Mm-hmm.
I am not pretending to know everything.
As a matter of fact, we know we don't know everything.
Yeah. There's always stuff you don't know, you haven't heard. Like, what's the thing on the internet? I was 10 years old when I found out X. I think Stan Lee once said this, talking about comic books. He's like that every character is somebody's favorite and every comic is somebody's first comic. And when you're talking about World of Warcraft, even though it's not comic books, it does have that same problem, or rather quality. Mm-hmm. In that, you know, you found out about Bolvar and Shadow Dragon in Shadowlands. Some people found about Bolgar back in like vanilla World of Warcraft when they were like playing around in Stormwind and first ran into the keep and saw him. The character's been around for a long time, but obviously everyone discovers these characters at different phases of their lives and different phases of play. I'd like it if there was a way to do this that wasn't just, you know, go to a place and have people tell you stuff. Like, I don't know how to one of the things I've been thinking about is it would be kind of cool if they brought back the lore walkers from Mists of Pandaria,
mm-hmm.
and had the Pandarian, like, imagine if the people of Pandaria, now that they're kind of forcibly integrated into Azeroth, if you want what we were just talking about with Hauazar not really being part of Azeroth, I mean, Sanctuary is kind of what Pandaria was like for Azeroth, because the mists kept them just out. Like, all this stuff was happening and they did not know about it, couldn't know about it, couldn't go see it. So now that they're connected, now that people from outside of Pandaria, even Pandaren from outside of Pandaria, are going to Pandaria, the Pandarians can go out of Pandaria too. And we've seen that. We've seen them do that too. So it would be cool if they were like collecting lore to try and understand the world that they're now in. And if they recruited us to help them, that'd give you a reason to do stuff with this, to learn it, to understand it. That isn't just, you know, hello, I'm a talking head. And here now is like, I'm going to complain about something for a second here. Do you guys, Joe, since Joe is the only one who can actually hear me talking, you've read David Eddings at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
I have my problems with David Eddings, both as a person and as a writer.
Well, there's plenty to have a problem with.
And I've read the Belgariad, of course, but I've also read like the Eleniad and then the one that followed it, the one that dealing with like the knights, like Sparhawk and all that.
Okay.
And one of the ones that really got to me was the character of Zanisha, who is in the second trilogy in the same world with the Eleniad. I can never remember its name, but it's Zanisha is from my perspective, Zanisha is from the land of the exposition dumpers, because that's all she does in these books. Every time there's like, what's going on, Zanisha? Blah! And there's like, you know, 10 pages later, you're like, okay, that's everything everybody knows about that. Thanks. I don't like it when books do that. I don't like it when stories do that. I don't like it when you don't discover it because you go there and experience it. You discover it because somebody steps out from around a corner and goes, hi, would you like some lore? And while I do, I am a sucker for lore. I much prefer it when the lore unfolds in a way, either because I run into pieces of it. Like, we've talked before about the Bethesda / Cyberpunk method of having data stuff that you find and read and gives you a piece of stuff without, you know, it being, it's not a textbook about everything. It's just, you know, this person's writing a letter to this person and you find it and read it. And okay, now I know a little bit. I like that approach, but I also like the idea of we're just straight up going on adventures to the, like, you know, what created the world? Well, this maniac is trying to go there and undo it. So we're going to follow them. And while we do, we're going to see all this stuff and that stuff is going to tell us things. I like that idea. So I would like it if the lore walkers came back, possibly, you know, hooking up with the Bronze Dragonflight in some way, because they've got this, the you know, they've got their whole new program that they're doing, and go forth into history, actually going to those times. Like, one of my favorite quests in Dragonflight is the one where you go back in time while trying to get Chromie back, and you end up in the Black Empire. And we've talked about this before, that the Black Empire one, that has huge potential for the entire rest of World of Warcraft's lore and our involvement in it. And you see it and you go there. And that's the kind of thing I would like more of. I don't want it to just be, you know, well, we now go to the Hall of Heroes in Stormwind and here's a bunch of statues you click on and they tell you the story of such character. Because that doesn't feel like gameplay to me.
Yeah, so my opinion on this has been for a very long time, and this is something I feel strongly about. They have a vehicle in the game in which to sort of bring players up to speed on a bunch of this stuff without having to rely on outside lore sources. Don't get me wrong, I love you guys coming here and listening to us, but we're always going to miss things if we try to cover all of it. The game's been around forever at this point.
And we don't have enough time per episode, man.
We don't.
We just did a recap of Diablo 4, just Diablo 4. It took us like four episodes,
extended length episodes. It took us about 8 hours and we missed a bunch of stuff.
Oh yeah, because that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. So in this particular case, though, I think there are two things that are very distinctly Warcraftian that we could do. And Matt hit both of them on the head, but I think we combine the Lore Walkers with the Bronze Dragonflight and do a revisit to sort of a Caverns of Time experience. Because one of the things that I thought was interesting, and we see a little bit of it in the current Mega Dungeon, is when you're in the Mega Dungeon, you're going through the Time Ways, you see like an alternate world where like you go through the Time Ways and you're when you fight Morchi, it's either Alliance or Horde that you're fighting against, and it's the old war. It's back with, you know, Hellscream 1.0. So we're talking way back when. You can get sort of an idea that we can revisit those places. Well, what happens if a Lore Walker has gone through the world, which we know that they've been doing now that the Bandaria is back to being one with the rest of the world, and goes to the Bronze Dragonflight and says, I want to experience this firsthand. And the Bronze Dragonflight goes, well, that's really dangerous, and you might mess things up if you, you know, alter the timeline. But we just got done dealing with all this stuff, and we have a hero available. Maybe they can go with you. And then we get to experience all of that stuff again. And I often wondered,
maybe they even create, like, maybe they're like, it is too dangerous, but we have the Sands of Time, so we can allow you to mentally experience all these things as if you were going there.
Combining it with the Lore Walker magic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. There's lots of ways you could do it.
And what I always wondered is, why not offer that as an alternate leveling experience? Because we have some great leveling experiences, and I understand the level of effort of work would be immense. But I thought it would be really neat, and I've been thinking about this for a while, if as a new player or as a player leveling an alt, maybe you came in late and you got your character to max, you're doing all the stuff, but then you want to level an alt and you want to level from scratch, maybe have that option where it's like experience the history of Warcraft as your leveling experience. And it takes you through the story while still giving you mechanical rewards by participating in things like the War of the Ancients and moving up through the Third War. We literally did this with the first defeat of Archimonde. When we went to Mount Hyjal, we literally went through the Caverns of Time and participated in the Warcraft 3 event, the canonical event, right? We helped the armies. We helped the armies at the bases exactly as it was laid out in that in Warcraft 3. Why not do something similar with a leveling experience that brings people up to speed with the major events and these characters and why they're important? Because, you know, Tasso is not the first person I've heard that has played exclusively one faction and maybe came in late and has no idea who a character is. And then all of a sudden that character pops up and they're like, why is this person important? And everybody's bending the knee. Because, again, the game's been around for, I mean, Warcraft alone has been around for almost 20 years at this point.
I think we are actually past the 20-year mark. Are we? By a lot. Oh, yeah, because think about it. I mean,
no, because it released in 2000. It released in 2004, World of Warcraft. I was talking World of Warcraft.
Okay, I thought you were saying Warcraft, just the entire Warcraft thing. Oh, yeah.
No, Orcs vs. Humans released in what?
92, 93? I don't. It's been a long time. I don't know the date off the top of my head, but I know
1994. Okay, so 10 years prior to that. So 30 years. 30 years this universe has been around in real time.
Yeah.
With
And that's just, yeah, just in change. And think about how much it's changed over that time period, man.
So, I mean,
listen to what you're saying, though, dude. I love this idea, and I want to jump onto it for a second.
Please.
Because one of the things I'm thinking about is, imagine if it went, like, in terms of your leveling experience, you start off as a lower-level character doing the stuff that's closer to your lifetime. Like, you go back to, say, the First War, and you experience the birth of Warcraft as we know it today.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you go up in levels, you go further back. So you don't start in the distant past and come forward. You start in the recent past, which is more, it's closer to you right now, so it's more fundamental to the experience in a way. And then you move back, like you jump to new periods and experience them, like you mentioned the War of the Ancients. But the one thing we've seen various takes on the War of the Ancients. We've been to the War of the Ancients quite a few times now. You know, one thing that we've never seen, and yet which is super important, the Troll Wars.
Yeah,
I want to see those Troll Wars. Why?
It is extremely extremely formative to the world.
Yeah, both humans and high elves, which are the blood elves and void elves now, their reactions and interactions, them fighting the Amani. The reason the Amani aren't the dominant power in the Eastern Kingdoms that they used to be, the lead up to Gurubashi, because Gurubashi, the whole thing with Kick-Thix and being discovered, that's all part of the Troll Wars. Even though it happens much later, it's because of the spreading of humanity down towards Gurubashi. It's because of the Kingdom of Stormwind that the Gurubashi trolls get desperate and dig that guy up. And that's the end of Gurubashi. That's that what happened. That's what caused it. And that's what created the Dark Spears. Because the Dark Spears were like, can we get as far away from this Hakkar thing as we can? This is bad. So yeah, there's just so much of it that we haven't seen. We've heard it mentioned, but we haven't seen it at all. It's never been in any game. Imagine all the stuff you could see.
Yeah. There's an opportunity to sort of bring the story back into the game. And Matt and I have advocated for that for a while now. It's one of the things, well, the outside stories in the books are fantastic. And, you know, reading the writings of like Christy Golden are always going to be a great time. It's a lot to ask of some players, right? Not everybody is us. Not everybody is as tuned into it or consumes it in the same way that we do. Mm-hmm. So having something that helps reiterate that story in the game, I think is good. And they've already introduced things like, now we have access to the time ways, right? Like we literally just opened that up. That's the whole point of this patch with the Mega Dungeon, is we literally help them crack open what's been in stasis for tens of thousands of years, right? Because that's the other thing to consider. Like the Bronze Dragonfly has been doing their thing without access directly to the time ways. They had agents that were stuck in there doing their thing. But until we got back to the Dragon Isles, yeah, that was it. That was all there was.
Yeah, that's why it was so hard to deal with when, you know, the Caverns of Time were attacked by the Old Gods. It was almost nothing they could do to stop it. Like, it basically, Nortzdormu was paralyzed. That's why Ronan and Crassus ended up going back in time to the War of the Ancients.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So there is a lot of this stuff. And everything I just said, a lot of you have no idea what I just said. You're like, what did he just... Because it happened in books. You know? And that's not, you know... Games with tie-in media, it's always a balancing act.
And it's hard. It's a hard thing to balance.
Yeah. And it's not just hard for the people doing the development, which it absolutely is. And, you know, kudos to all of you. But it's also hard for people who play the games and who love the stuff, because not everybody learns the same way. Not everybody enjoys the same things. I like to read and I like to learn that way, but there's lots of people who don't.
Yeah. So there are some people that are kinesthetic learners.
Yeah. And so, yeah, having it be in the game, having it be accessible in the game.
Or as an option at the very least.
Yeah, as an option at the very least. And not just because having it happen where you actually see it acted out in front of you and in front of your character, there's a difference between that and even like cool stuff like the Overwatch shorts we just saw. Which, I mean, for all that we had our complaints, I mean, they were still pretty cool. It's just that, you know, we want more. We want more, more, more all the time. I think Joe's got it right on the money here. Like, it would just bringing it back to the game is making it accessible to people for whom the game is their way in.
Hopefully that helps answer your question and gives you a little perspective, and maybe we'll see something to that. And you know, I'm not going to say that we don't have 300 some odd episodes that you can go back and listen to that will kind of help you out as well. But I'm going to tell you that we have 300 some odd episodes that you can go back to and listen to, and they'll help you out. Keep track of all these characters. So, you know, it's there for you. We're here to support you. We're going to move on to, I think we have time for one more question. And this one comes from Arrowhan. This is, the Incarnate seemed very certain that information would be found in Abarus that would be extremely demoralizing to the Aspects. However, it doesn't seem like the Aspects have a strong reaction overall. What is this big Azeroth-shattering revelation supposed to be? Is it just how much Neltharion was doing immoral experiments before being corrupted? Why don't we get that big reaction? Was Firak too hungry for Shadowflame to focus? Is Iridacron just bad at reading the room? Maybe. So Iridacron he's got his own plans. Iridacron's had his own plans from the very beginning. Even before they were captured, even before they, like... we're doing anything. While they made their deals, Iridacron has his own agenda. He wants power. And he is very aware of the void. I don't know that the other incarnates are, but Iridacron is. We see that throughout Abarus. We see that through the Mega Dungeon as well when we confront him and the sort of ending scene of that, which I'm not going to ruin. But he's got his own thing going on. Fire-Ak just wants to burn the world. Fire-Ak doesn't care about shattering the aspects. Fire-Ak just wants to destroy everything, wipe everything back to zero, and be done. He is very much what you would expect Wild Flame to want to do. He just wants mm-hmm. to burn. And the grand revelation, I think part of it is that even before he was truly corrupted, Naltharion was doing not just immoral things, but was, again, trucking with forces that were anathema to them. Like, you go to his personal sanctum, and where do you find? He's been reading and experimenting with void in particular. Shadow. He's been this thing that caused them to have to fight Galakrond in the first place. This thing that we know corrupts absolutely. And yet here he is experimenting with it, trying to harness its power and not telling anyone. Not even his closest allies knew he was doing this. Not those that considered him a brother. And yeah, that's pretty disheartening. Go to the first boss of Abarus. Khazarok is a dragon that their flesh has been melted because he was experimenting with bolting molten plates to them. This is before he was corrupted. How is that going to be cool with any of them?
I also think, to a degree, it isn't that... There's a lot of ways to think about what demoralizing is. We're used to demoralizing be along the concept of, you know, they've lost the will to fight, because that's usually how it's used. But one of the things it can also be used to do is it can be used to turn allies against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be used to divide people's focus. Like, they're not, if they're not, I think Aridocron is thinking, what Aridocron is really thinking is, if they're busy dealing with all of this, they don't have time to figure out what I'm doing.
Yep.
The more, and I'm not saying that's what he tells the other incarnates, because Aridocron does not care about the other incarnates. They do not matter to Aridocron in the slightest. They are tools. And it's also true that the incarnates themselves are also not monolithically united. We see that.
Yeah, we see Varanoth having a conversation with Alexstrasza. There's history between those two.
Yeah, it seems from what Alexstrasza says that they were very close at one.
College roommates, clearly.
I was actually going to say, if this was Critical Role, you would already be seeing fan art. And then I'm like, what am I talking about? People have already drawn fan art of these two. But yeah, there's a lot going on here. There's a lot we don't know about the period of time where all of this started. Like, and that ties into stuff too. Like, we see a lot of stuff that Naltharion's doing, but one of the things that gets me and that doesn't get mentioned enough is that Naltharion was looking into the Titans.
Yes, digging.
He was digging into what the Titans had done and what they were doing. And we know that the Titans, at least the Titan Forged, not the Titans themselves, because again, we often say the Titans when we mean is the Titan Forged, were not of one mind about what the dragons should be. And even Tyr talks about the infusing them with order to make them controllable. And Tyr is like their great champion. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff that I don't think we've finished with what Abarus is going to reveal.
No, and I mean, there's other things that could have happened there as well too. Like, one of the other things with Abarus that I think often gets lost in the conversation is who was going into Abarus. It was the Black Dragons going after the Drakthyr for multiple reasons. It was Rathian and Sibelian trying to reclaim parts of their father's legacy and their knowledge, but even Ebonhorn was going to, well, up to the gates. He wasn't actually physically going in. But he did as much as he did because he owed a debt to the Drakthyr and he wanted to make good on it. But these are the legacy of Naltharion. These are the ones that have the potential to break the cycle of corruption that Naltharion or embrace it. And here's a key factor of this. The entire time you're going through that raid, you are led by an image of Naltharion or an echo of Naltharion. And what is it doing? It's offering and praising both of the children. when you split one way, it's talking with Raytheon, telling him how clever he is and praising him for his audacity and his strength of will and character. And then when you're with Sibelian, he's praising him for, you know, his tactical mind and how, you know, good of a leader he is and everything else. And then when you finally get down to the inner sanctum, like I want to call it the waiting room, before you go to where the actual final battle is, and you fight this shade of Neltharion, the first thing it says is, "You did not accept my gifts. Pity, I hoped you would have." Personally, I think Eridacron knew that that thing was down there. And I think that part of it was also hoping that whatever was down there would corrupt the children and cause more mayhem. Like going back to what Matt was talking about. Because imagine what would have happened if Raytheon or Sibelian would have accepted the gift, or if both of them would have. Now you have a new, fresh cycle of corrupted black dragons that are now fighting against other black dragons and the rest of the Dragonflight, while Eridacron's doing his stuff in the time ways, right? He's going after his true plan. And the reason I think that he knew was there is because what happens in the Mega Dungeon. And again, I don't want to spoiler it, but there's a moment where the final confrontation, when everything is said and done and you're done dealing with him, that little 3-second or 13-second window, you see something happen and you realize he's deeper in and has more connections and knowledge than we previously considered. I think that was potentially part of it as well for the demoralizing. The taking away of the reunification of the Dragonflights, because if it was successfully corrupted again, now they no longer have the Earth Warders. They no longer have access to that. They now have a fresh set of mourning to do. The Mortal Champions lose a insanely useful ally, because we fought an old god with Raytheon, right? He was there with us. Could we have done that without him? Probably not. We wouldn't have been able to get through the carapace. He figured out what needed to be done. Is he perfect? No, but without him, there's several things that wouldn't have happened that probably would have been bad. So I think that's something you also have to consider as far as demoralizing. Any other thoughts on that, Matt?
I'm just thinking about in terms of, I don't know how to explain this exactly. I'm thinking in terms of how to explain why we're not done with it. And I think one of the things to think about is just as this onion gets unpeeled, things get more and more complicated. And we've seen with the Alexstrasza scene from this expansion, you know, we know that she's already on the brink.
Yeah.
Like she's having to do a lot. So yeah, there's, I don't think that they were, I don't think that, Eridacron can be taken at face value when he says things to the other incarnates.
Not even like, close.
But also I don't think that we're necessarily, it's not that they haven't reacted so much as when did they get time to react? Think about this too. We're now already like, we're still in the patch where Avarice is introduced. And then we get this patch where there's suddenly the time waves are going crazy. And now we got to deal with that. There's no time to be like, oh, I can't believe all the things Neltharion did. You know, it's like, put it in a box and we have to move on.
It's a siege. Time crisis.
Yeah.
It's a siege. It is a siege from the very beginning.
It is engineered to be a campaign of distraction. Whilst he goes for what he wants, we don't know what it is.
It's just emotional turmoil and emotional baggage piled up high, breaking down the enemy.
I think of it this way. Of all games, Diablo 4 is actually a good example of this, where we're spending most of that game. We have no idea what Lilith is doing.
Yeah.
And it's just now coming to my mind that we have even less of an idea what Eridacron's doing, because we don't know anything about him.
Well, other than again, we have
been dropped.
Yeah, like, we're starting to get there.
We're starting to get there as of now, but we have been acting, trying to prevent what the incarnates are doing without any real knowledge of what the incarnates are doing. And that's, you know, I think we're at the point where we're going to see us having to switch pathways to beat him. Like, we're not going to beat him if we keep running after him. You know, the way to beat somebody is not to be following their footsteps continuously. You have to get out ahead of them. So yeah, there's a lot more going on here that we're going to get to see. But yeah, I definitely think that had things gone badly in Avarice, Eridacron wouldn't have been wrong.
Yeah,
No, keep in mind, it certainly wasn't his intention that the Black Dragonflight come out unified and with a new choice to be the next aspect if one is ever created. So that's worth considering.
Well, hopefully that answers your question and gives you a little insight, but I think that's going to do it for us today, folks. Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/blizzardwatch. Your continued support means this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast or the Q&A ads free site experience. Again, if you have questions for any of our podcasts, be sure to send them in. You can send those in to podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Specify what show it is for in the subject line, if you could please. Also hit us up on Discord. We have our Q and podcast questions channel, which is open for everybody. If you are a Patreon supporter, where all these questions came from this week, thank you again. You can hit us up on our Patreon Q and podcast questions channel. We ask that, again, you give us what show it's for, and if, like many of you did, and I appreciate it, I truly do, giving us pronunciations of your name, it helps immensely. Another thing that I'm going to call to action here, and I've been doing this a lot lately, discoverability is going to be a problem for shows like ours in the future just due to sort of the death of Twitter, which is sort of inevitable, which means that if you can share our content on any of the platforms that you're on, it would be appreciated. Giving us comments, likes, follows, anything on anywhere that we are, it would help immensely, including, and many people don't know this, all of our podcasts are available on YouTube as well. Subscribing to that channel, giving it likes and upvotes, leaving comments on the comment section there help immensely with us battling against an already inundated algorithm system to make sure that our show is sticking around for a while. And if you can't support us monetarily, please do consider the Patreon, because that also helps us. Well, I say keep the lights on. That is legitimately the case. So any way you can help us, we do appreciate it. And yeah. Thank you very much. With that, folks, we'll see you next week.
Pumpkins.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.